C-H-A-R-D, construction.com. So stay tuned for the Peace and Justice program. I'm going to play you a little David Rovics. He was in town Wednesday night. He was fabulous, and a lot of you missed him, so I'm sorry about that, but I'm here to remind you about how fantastic he is.
One, two, three, four. First you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you. They're holding the same card. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change. So quick. The congressmen and businessmen and TV set.
All right, so here we are, Peace and Justice program. I have in the studio with me two incredible people. They are Maya Danik, GSEC intern and stage manager. I should say that all the way out. I'm drawing a blank, Maya. GSEC.
Yes.
Hit it. What does it mean?
Yes. GSEC is the Gender and Sexuality Equity Coalition on GSEC State Campus.
Thanks. Just stop there. Okay, so I just wanted to... Because I was going to say GSEC, and I couldn't get what they stood for. So let me just finish introducing you, because I want to hear what you're going to say. So anyway, Maya is a GSEC intern and stage manager, and Elise Detweiler is a creative director of the Vagina Monologues. They're in the studio with me today, and Maya Danik is a senior at Chico State, majoring in sociology and minoring in theater arts. She's excited to combine her love for activism and the arts through her involvement with the first Vagina Monologues production Chico State has seen since the COVID-19 epidemic. Yoo-hoo! She interns at the Gender and Sexuality Equity Coalition, there it is, and works on campus as a theater electrician and props fabricator. The most recent show she worked on aside from the Vagina Monologues was the Chico State Theater's Three Musketeers, a devised play for which she was a props lead. Elise Detweiler is a singer, songwriter, producer, and entrepreneur. Some may know her as Elise the Destroyer. Yeah. And now she takes on a new role since this play is her directorial debut. Her background in theater has always been roles in the wings, but thanks to Maya, she has been given an opportunity to expand her resume and channel her creative energy into a new kind of medium. Working beside the beautiful women and vulva-having people is one of the most rewarding projects of her lifetime. I want to thank you both for coming in, and a shout-out to everybody who's involved in the Vagina Monologues. It's so important. We were talking about this beforehand. You know, and we want to kind of get into it, but we were going, what words can we say? So, Maya, do you want to start off and first tell us what the Vagina Monologues is?
Yeah, so the Vagina Monologues, written by Eve Ensler, who now goes by V, they are a playwright and activist. It is a bunch of monologues, basically, put together by V, taken from a bunch of real-life interviews with people who have vaginas about different topics relating to that, like sexuality, stigma, the highs and lows, I like to say, of owning a vagina. And, yeah, it's a really unique show. There's only a few group scenes. The rest is just monologues, and it touches on everything from, sexual experiences to... body empowerment, and it's a really amazing show. We have a wonderful cast and wonderful directors.
Do you want to add to that your relationship with the founding Eve Ensler part of this, and how you've adapted this work? Because I know that you've had a big part in this.
Yeah. So as a director, it was mainly... Well, we had this moment where we all got together, the other two directors, Shirley and Demondra and I, and Maya was there as well. We kind of just went down the list and decided who was going to direct which piece together. When I was choosing my pieces, I was going from a place of, how well can I tackle this? And I ended up with one of the most like happier ones, like reclaiming the C word. And then, but I also ended up with one of the sadder ones, which was about domestic violence and like, you know, the R word. And that one is called My Vagina Was My Village. And, you know, when I was going over the different like meanings in each one, when we realized the order that Eve Ensler put the monologues in, it was a beautiful like roller coaster of like, what does it mean to have a vagina? I am learning what it means to have a vagina. My vagina has been taken away from me. I'm angry about my vagina. And then this other one that's like, I'm ecstatically eluded to tell you how to love your vagina. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is like, this is why I worship vagina. And it's, I love that like order and how emotional like that journey is when it comes to like the different feelings you can have towards it, and how each piece makes the last one make more sense every time. So that's what I'd say.
Yeah. You know, I know Eve Ensler was really involved in the what was happening in the Congo, very much involved in, you know, some of the horrors of rape.
Yeah.
And as part of a genocidal thing that was going on, and so I'm really happy the way you talked about how that evolution happened. But how do you feel like your generation relates to some of the hardships of women who have been violated, women who are, you know, who aren't in that creative, happy place with who they are and what their vaginas stand for in terms of their relationship with their bodies and their and their environment?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like with our generation now, there's so much happening all the time with social media and with, you know, different news sources and stuff. It's just, there's something, you know, tragic happening all the time. And, it's awful, but it has also given us new ways to connect and to, you know, relate to experiences. And you know, there's some experiences relating to that, like, that I will never know firsthand and I can never truly fully understand. But yeah, it is, you know, it is nice to know that we have, you know, a platform here within the Vagina Monologues, especially, where we can share those different stories of, like, you know, not everything is rose-colored glasses. Like, there's good things, there's bad things.
And just to add to that, it's really interesting how even like within the piece we had to update certain facts to collide or to actually it makes sense to our generation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, originally I think in the script it only talks about like what happened or the different women that were raped in Kosovo and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we decided to add the word to add Ukraine's name as well to that list because of what's going on there right now. Mm-hmm. And then we also we had to unfortunately update the amount of people who are raped in America every year to 400,000 rather than the 250 that was originally in the script.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's what's like, that's one of the harder things is when you get to My Vagina Was My Village, it really does take a shift because you have the not-so-happy fact that talks about genital mutilation happening in Africa. And even that, it's kind of updated to, you know, there's the 2020 version of the script. It does talk about how it has gone down from 51% to 37%. And that's on the brighter side, but it's still not like what we need and what we want for the world. So like once you get to that lull, not even a lull, but once you get to that like actual moment of just like reflection of the violence that women face because of owning a vagina, or just even the violence that people with vaginas experience because of that organ that we all share, it feels even more, what's the word, cathartic when you hear My Angry Vagina, which comes on right after that, because it talks about how there's an army of people out there trying to control our poor, gentle, loving vagina. Mm-hmm. That's a quote from the show. <That's so good. laughs> But yeah, that's what I would add.
Yeah, and you brought up two things for me. One is about gender, and then you talk about, you know, we can't say just women anymore. We have mm-hmm. to open it up to, you know, people who have vaginas, because mm-hmm. people are learning more about themselves now, and they no longer identify as women, and so or they do identify as women, but they are transgendered. So mm-hmm. it becomes more complex, but also mm-hmm. the community of need that we embrace, you know, our sisters, you know, is bigger now. And how is that linking in? Are people talking about that within your production company? Has that been part of the conversation? Yeah. I imagine you've had some deep conversation.
Yeah, we talked about it in the beginning of the process, of the rehearsal process, and we kind of decided to the characters' names in the group scenes are like Woman 1, Woman 2, Woman 3, mm-hmm. And we decided to kind of amongst ourselves call them, you know, Person 1, Person 2, Person mm-hmm. 3, mm-hmm. But there is kind of, on the other hand, that piece of like a lot of the stigma and the violence that does happen against vagina owners is really rooted in sexism and gender. Mm. So it's a really interesting relationship to navigate, definitely.
Mm. Yeah. We went out of our way to change a few of the lines that say women to people with vaginas, or just people, because we didn't feel like it took away from Eve Ensler's message. For example, all of the people interviewed were asked the following question: if your vagina could talk, what would it say? Instead of if all of the women were asked the following question. Mm-hmm. It was like really subtle, tiny changes like that that we felt like would, bring people in and feel comfortable being non-binary in the space, and even like having that conversation with the cast at the beginning to use gender-neutral language. I think we even have two or three people in our cast and crew who are non-binary but are more femme-presenting and are vagina owners. So it really just helped us overall to take that into consideration, and it bonded us even closer, mm-hmm. and it made it even more of like our piece of like our time. Yeah. It connected it to our generation even more, just from those subtle changes.
Yeah, and my generation has so much to learn from you, because this is really important transition time in terms of humankind, mm-hmm. that we're getting to know ourselves better. I want to reintroduce you here. I have in the studio with me Maya Danik. She's a GSEC intern and stage manager, and Elise Detweiler, who is the creative director of the Vagina Monologues. Maya, can you tell us the details about the Vagina Monologues so that people are able to go? Because I know it's this weekend. And tell us all the details.
Yeah, so GSEC is putting this event on for the first time since before the pandemic, which is super exciting. It used to be an annual event. I think GSEC started it actually while they were still under Associated Students Women's Center back in the late 90s. It was an annual event, and we're bringing it back this weekend only. So it's going to be tonight, Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m. Doors will open at 6:30. And then tomorrow, Saturday, February 11th, there'll be a 2 p.m. showing and a 7 p.m. showing. Again, doors open half an hour prior to show. And you can get your tickets at the university box office, in person, online, or over the phone. And they're $10 for students right now and seniors, and $13 for general public, and they'll be $15 at the door.
Yes, and it's at the Roland Taylor Theater,
mm-hmm.
and yes. also known as PAC 134.
Yes, in the Performing Arts Center.
Performing Arts Center.
You know, Elise, as the creative director, I wanted to ask you about how you outreach to people who wanted to participate in the monologue, since they are so intimate and they're so personal, and I think it would take a lot of strength to step up in front of a crowd in order to say what the lines are.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, how did you find these people?
Oh, I would say, okay, Maya's really good at promoting. They were really on top of, like, getting the word out and such. When it came to me and, like, the directors, I thought it would be really good when it came to audition times. We had a little blurb from each show written or put into a piece of paper, and then they could decide which blurb they would perform for us or audition to us with. A lot of people chose my angry vagina to audition with, and I think it's because it was just so relatable, and it did get a lot of that frustration out that we've been feeling about tampons and like things like that. When it came to getting personal with people and like asking them if they were comfortable, yeah, like that was a conversation I had like really early on with, I want to say, Skylar, when it came to My Vagina Was My Village, about like their comfort level with saying these pieces. And they even told me that they wanted to be sympathetic and empathetic toward the interviewer, the person who was interviewed, whose conversation led to that piece. Mm-hmm. So when they were deciding to perform it, they didn't want to perform it as them. They wanted to perform it as a piece of theirs, that they were paying tribute to them. Mm-hmm. So they kind of used more of a spoken word or slam poetry way to go about it. And I think that was one way for them to handle the vulnerability that comes with that kind of piece. I think when we gave everybody the blurbs, they got a really good idea of what each monologue would be about, just based off those sentences that we chose. Each one has like, or the blurbs that I went out of my way to choose had like, I want to say like the climax of the monologue in it, so that way they knew like that was the beat change that would make them feel something. And if they connected with it, then that would be the one that they spoke or performed for us. Yeah.
Wow. Did you want to add anything, Maya?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, like, I don't know, Shirley, Elise, and Dee did an amazing job, like, casting all the people who auditioned for all the roles in the play, and just, like, I don't know, it, like, seeing it come to fruition, like, everyone fits the roles so perfectly, and it was just really cool being a part of that process and seeing everyone kind of grow to adapt to telling these stories that they related to or that they wanted to represent and, you know, make people, you know about them more, like Village. It's a really important one.
You know, I was reading that many colleges have gone on to develop their own plays, that they sometimes, they don't even use the pre-written plays, and they sometimes feature actors who write their own monologues. And I think I was telling you that I'm a nurse practitioner and I see a lot of vaginas, and I thought, I could write a monologue. And then I actually thought about writing a monologue. I would go, how would I ever? You know, it's the creative process that is possible, and this is just endless, and I just really respect what you've been able to do and what you are doing. Thanks. So look forward to seeing this. But in terms of questions, you guys weren't really aware of the $1 billion rising, but for listeners, I mean, this has always been a really powerful part of this time of the year, because this $1 billion rising, women all over the world are standing up, and they are in their local communities, you know, standing up against impunity and injustice about survivors of rape culture. And so I do recommend $1 billion Rising, that you can just Google that. But what other resources would you have our listeners, besides this weekend when we're going to have this rare opportunity to see the vagina monologues, which I'm really stoked about, but what else would you think, in your preparation or in your readings or in the things that you've seen, how would you direct people right now in terms of the rights of women and what's going on? I know you're wearing a shirt, destigmatize abortion. Take that and run with it, please.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, in terms of local resources, actually, our partners on this event are women's health specialists over here in Chico, and they have locations in Redding and Grass Valley as well, and Catalyst Domestic Violence Services, which I believe they're located right downtown in Chico. They're both very amazing orgs. Women's Health Specialists does a lot with education and advocacy relating to reproductive justice and health and just destigmatization of those topics and kind of working with people's personal experiences. So they're a really great clinic, really great resource, very sex positive, very pro-choice. And then Catalyst is another wonderful resource that we're partnering with. They have a 24/7 domestic violence hotline. They house people trying to get away from intimate partner violence situations. They have counseling, legal advocacy, support for immigrant and LGBTQ plus survivors. Again, education and advocacy, really, really thankful for the work that both of those orgs are doing, and thankful to be partnering with them on this.
You know, and Elise, you're an artist. I wanted to also have you be able to self-promote a little bit about like where you're going with your career as an artist, because I think this is the future.
I think that for me in my art right now, I took a break from making music to focus on my theater time. Or as soon as Maya gave me this opportunity, I was like, oh, perfect. Because I had a minor in theater and I majored in English. And so I've always had this really soft spot for literature and for seeing the script and turning that into something bigger, especially like working backstage and stuff. And I think, especially like this being a piece about like, or coming from a feminine place, I've never found a way to speak about like my beliefs and things, because I never felt comfortable like writing that into a song, or I didn't know how to write that into a song. I feel like after this like moment though, and after like all these rehearsals and these deep conversations with all my new friends that I've met through the cast, I think there's this like newfound respect I have for like just like the shared experience that we all have, because we're all worried about the same fears that come along with owning vagina. And I think that's something that I can write into my music, and I think that's something that I can put into even my like stories when I write poems and things like that. I already feel like a deep appreciation for like my connection to the earth, and even just like seeing all the different women across the world going through things right now, I just feel this like this newfound motivation to like appreciate my body and to love myself and to not look at it as something that needs to be changed. And I think that's something I want to like keep with me throughout my career for the rest of my life. I hope to like continue to be a director, and honestly it would be dope to revisit this monologue or to revisit this play when I'm older and I could do it again and direct it again, or even star in it next time. That would be super cool. I just feel such a deep connection to all of the pieces now. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And once again, I'd like you to please give the information about, you know, where, when.
Oh yes. So it's going to be at the Performing Arts Center in PAC 134, as they call it, Roland Taylor. It's going to be $10 for students and seniors.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to give the amount.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah.
It doesn't cost a whole lot.
No, it doesn't cost a whole lot. Okay. But it's on Roland Taylor Theater, PAC 134 on Chico State campus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's today at 7 p.m. and tomorrow at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. February 10th, February 11th. Yay!
I just think it's
going to
be really sad when it's over.
I think so.
What do you do next? So this is my last question because we're out of time. But what next for you two rather brilliant women?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm really excited for the rest of the semester in terms of work with the Gender and Sexuality Equity Coalition. Last semester was my first time interning with them, and I just like completely fell in love with it and the work that we do there. We have a bunch of really cool events coming up, like Queer Prom. We have the Erotic Art Show. I went to that last year for the first time. It was amazing. Just amazing local artists. We have Take Back the Night, beautiful event. We have Period Week, and yeah, I'm just really excited for the work in that. It's a bunch of really fun and empowering events happening.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I'll just be putting on an event in March or April to bring in Destruction, and as my hurrah and my goodbye to Chico. So I know it's like a whole, I want to do an art little festival to talk about like beauty and destruction and nature taking back the everything but like a music thing. I don't know how to describe it. It's still in the works, but it. Yes, that's my next thing.
Keep us posted.
Yes, in your loop, in absolutely your thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Yes.
Oh. You know, I didn't even have my mic on then. I just was thanking them, and I'm urging folks to get out and see the Vagina Monologues. It's such a powerful, powerful piece. Yay. And we are so lucky that we're able to have this in Chico. I really salute the folks that made this happen. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Peace to you both. All right, folks, this is your community radio station, KZFR. I'm going to put on a piece of music, and then we're going to go to the next guest. But I wanted to, this is Black History Month, so I just want to introduce this song. This is Swing Low, Sweet Chariot by the Fisk Jubilee Singers. It was recorded in 1909. And this was, they think this was composed by Wallace Willis, who was a Choctaw freedman in the Indian Territory, what is Choctaw County, in Hugo, Oklahoma, around 1865. They think that he may have been inspired by the sight of the Red River by which he was toiling, which reminded him of the Jordan River and of the prophet Elijah being taken to heaven by chariots. Some believe that it had to do with referring to the Underground Railroad, the freedom movement that helped people come up from slavery. And we don't really know, but Alexander Reed, who was a minister at the boarding school there, heard Willis singing this song and transcribed the music and melodies and sent it to the Jubilee Singers of Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee, and the Jubilee Singers popularized the song, which has, you know, it's been over, well over 100 years, and this song is well known all over the country. And of course, the Nazis in 1939 added it to the list of undesired and harmful musical works. So this is a song I want to send out in loving memory of Ed Pittman, who is rode that chariot home quite recently. And so here you go.
Coming for to carry me home. coming for the Caribbean. Coming for the Caribbean. I love the Jordan.
All right, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. The Fisk Singers and Fisk Jubilee Singers from 1909, and I couldn't get my guest on the line, and I'm gonna try again to get him on the line, because sometimes persistence helps, but other times it doesn't. But who I want to talk to now is Rory Fanning. He, following two deployments to Afghanistan with the 2nd Army Ranger Battalion, he became one of the first U.S. Army Rangers to resist the Iraq War and the global war on terror. In 2008 and 2009, he walked across the United States for the Pat Tillman Foundation. Rory is the author of Worth Fighting For, an Army Ranger's Journey Out of the Military and Across America. And he also co-authored another book called Long Shot, The Triumphs and Struggle of an NBA Freedom Fighter. He has bylines at Common Dreams, The Guardian, The Nation, and Tom Dispatch. In 2015, he was awarded a grant from the Chicago Teachers Union to speak to students about America's endless wars and to fill in some of the blanks military recruiters often ignore about America's endless wars. As a sponsored lifetime member of Veterans for Peace, Rory has traveled multiple times to Japan on speaking tours to express solidarity with those seeking to abolish nuclear weapons and close U.S. military bases around the world. Rory currently lives in Chicago and works for Haymarket Books. And that's how I kind of met him, because he sent me Emerald Gardner's book, who I interviewed a few months ago, and that was a great honor. And I think that he's good at that job too. So anyway, I wanted to get him on today. People in Chico have asked me to interview him in the past, and I finally read his book and was really impressed with it. It's it was published in 2014, so it's not a new book, but we are still dealing with the fallout from the Iraq War. It's 20 years on now, and we still have use of military force thing is still in effect. So if Biden wanted to bomb in Iraq, if he wanted to do what Trump did, which was to kill Suleiman in Iran, you know, the president has authority that was never granted to him. This was something that happened after 9/11, and it needs to be withdrawn to end this unlimited power of the presidency. And so the Friends Committee on National Legislation has a campaign right now to get that withdrawn. And, I'm sorry, I don't even have it in my notes, which is unfortunate, but I would like to talk more about that if only I could talk. So I wanted to do some announcements, and I'm going to try to get Rory on the phone again here in a minute, and keep your fingers crossed for me. So on February 16th, we're headed back to Beale Air Force Base. We go there once a month with Occupy Beale. And this month, our theme is going to be love one another. This is a concept that is hard in our country because there's so much division. But it's also true that that killing is wrong. And I think that the life of Rory Fanning shows that, because he wanted to do something after 9/11, and so he had seen this movie, Black Hawk Down, and he was impressed by the Army Rangers, so that's where he headed, and he did all the training, and he you know, I think he liked the physical part of the training, but he did not want to kill anyone. And he realized after his time in Afghanistan that the worst violence was the poverty against the Afghani people. Seeing that poverty, you know, that was where the violence was. And so he became a conscientious objector. He's the first person, and probably only person, that's ever walked away from Rangers and survived it, because they treated him really, really, really badly. After he said, "Nope, I'm not going to Iraq. I'm not going to be part of it," and so he's a really unique person. And so when we go to Beal, part of our effort is to kind of do consciousness raising with the people that drive past us, to plant a seed in their minds about the wars that they're engaged in. And of course, now they may not be physically engaged in it, but the whole Ukraine thing just filters through to everything. The Beale Air Force Base has this satellite apparatus to wage a nuclear war on the west coast of the United States. That is what is there. And so some of those people would be involved in that. If there were to be a nuclear war, they would be calling it, they'd be calling it in, they'd be calling it out. And, you know, it's kind of a time and a place where every soldier has responsibility. You know, every piece of the machine is the machine. So anyway, it's like the universal soldier kind of theme that Buffy St. Marie talked about during the Vietnam War. You know, his orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see this is not a way to put an end to war? So we get out there and we try to have a different theme every month. Last month we focused on Dr. King's messages about the wars, our endless wars, and so this week we'll be focusing on love. So if you're interested, you can write to me, christopherpox@gmail.com. We can carpool down. Be happy to meet you. And then also on February 22nd, join the Concerned Citizens for Justice and 40 Grandmothers in a rally vigil acknowledging local police killings and in solidarity with the loved ones of the national and local police killings. And that's Wednesday, February 22nd at the Downtown Plaza on the corner of 4th and Main Streets, 5 to 6 p.m. It says bring your sign on that. And if you want more information, you go to cc4jchico@gmail.com. And then also there's going to be Chico Peace Alliance is co-sponsoring the 1 year anniversary of the war in Ukraine, the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the subsequent war. And it's on the 24th of February. That's when all of this started. And so we are calling for negotiation in Ukraine and to defuse the risk of nuclear war. And that will be 4:30 to 5:30 on the Esplanade at Independence Circle near the office of Doug LaMalfa, who is our quasi-representative. He's supposed to represent us, but really, really hasn't. But anyway, negotiations in Ukraine are absolutely critical by supplying more weapon systems and more advanced weapon systems and more invasive weapon systems. What we're doing is to increase the risk of nuclear war with Russia. And what we need is to stop the war. The people of Ukraine have suffered enough, and it is, all wars have to end, and they end with negotiations. So now is the time. You know, I do not think this can be won on the battlefield, and probably neither do you if you think it through. David Rovick said something that I was kind of impressed with. He said, people are putting morality ahead of reality. And morality, yes, it was wrong what Russia did, but reality is that we are all at risk if a nuclear war comes to pass. So it's very important to end it before it starts. So I'm going to put on another David Rovics cut. I hope this is relevant. It's from a number of years ago. It's about Syria. And this is from 10 years ago. It's called Syria 2013. And so then I'll see if I can get our guest on one more time. Here we go.
There's an uncivil war in Syria, 100,000 dead, millions of refugees without a roof over their heads, proxy armies flowing into a country open wide. You got Al-Qaeda and America fighting side by side. You got Saudi monarchs and French socialists on one team. You got Russia and Iran backing the regime. You got the Arab League having another meaningless debate, saying, let's just see what happens if we wait. But now the West says gloves are off, it's all become too real. Now Hollande and Obama are dictating the deal. Now red lines have been crossed, now it's time to act. Now it's time to have a few million tons of impact. Now it's time to do the thing the West does best. Time to step in the hornet's nest. We don't know who did it, but there's been a war crime. So we'll bomb an air.
Okay, so I have on the line with me Rory Fanning. Rory, welcome to the Peace and Justice Program. I announced you. I talked about you already. Your ears were probably burning there in Chicago, but welcome.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's a pleasure to be on. Sorry for the technological miscommunication.
Yeah, me too, really. I'd much rather have you talking than me, I'll tell you that much. So, I told our audience that that you went into the military right after 9/11, and I was wondering, you know, what is the you of 20 years later thinking about the you that went into the military in terms of how you see 9/11 and your worldview? How has it changed?
Yeah, You know, went into 9/11 with just a general sense of hoping I could do my part to prevent another 9/11 from happening again. And I saw when I was in Afghanistan that I was nothing more than a bully, and I was only creating the conditions for more attacks against the U.S. The U.S. was not going to Afghanistan to spread democracy or liberate anyone. They were out for blood, and I think looking for an excuse to maintain Cold War-era military budgets. And if you have an enemy that is everywhere and nowhere at the same time, as we saw over the last 20 years, that was probably a good plan on the part of the Defense Department, because we've had that excuse to be running after people in Afghanistan and the like, in Iraq and all of the Middle East and most other countries around the world for a long time. So I was quite disappointed, and I felt betrayed, and it's why I became a war resister. And I have since been going into high schools and colleges and telling young people who are trying to be recruited by, you know, the more than 11,000 military recruiters around the world, why they should consider not joining. I think if you're going to go ask someone to kill and die for a cause, they should have the full story before they do that. And so often, and actually in most instances, young people can't tell you the full story of what the U.S. Military is doing around the world.
Yeah, and I want to get back to that, but I just want to talk about your book just for 1 minute. But you wrote this book, Worth Fighting For, An Army Ranger's Journey Out of the Military and Across America, and I just want to just say how amazing you are, Rory Fanning, that you, in 2008, you walked for 8 months, 3,000 miles with a 45-pound pack on your back. You met many, many ordinary Americans and got the keys to five cities. But all that time, you were talking about the Pat Tillman Foundation and in having so many conversations, but you never really talked about your anti-war views. When you look back on that now, what do you think about how it would have been different or how you might have been different if you had it been now?
Yeah, I was still pretty traumatized, and I'm not going to say I'm completely fixed after that walk, but I was trying to walk across the country for someone who indirectly saved my life. And I wanted, you know, and I was also scared. Telling your full story, walking across America about why the U.S. military is not necessarily not a force for good around the world, was a daunting task for me. But in many ways, I was just hoping to have normal conversations with other human beings because I was having a hard time leaving my house and interacting with people on any kind of real social level. And I thought walking across the country with 50 pounds on my back, with the opportunity to stay or go wherever I wanted, was kind of a way to just kind of, you know, get better, mend myself a little bit. And, but after I finished the walk, 8 months, 3,300 miles, I still kind of felt like half of a person when I returned home. And that's when I decided to retrace my steps via history books. And I really didn't have a solid worldview walking across the country at the time anyways. I just felt this general sense of betrayal and this need to kind of be fixed. But I retraced my steps via history books. I walked where Nat Turner had his slave revolt. I walked where Ida B. Wells wrote her anti-lynching papers. I walked where the San Patricio Battalion, a group of Irish migrants who refused to fight the Mexicans in the Mexican-American War, were all hung by the U.S. government. I walked where Dolores Huerta organized farm workers. And, you know, these were war resistors or conscientious objectors of a different sort, and if they could tell their story, I could certainly tell mine. And I collected all their stories and interspersed those with my story of walking across the country and put them into this book. And I've since been going to high schools and colleges and kind of sharing my story.
Yeah, and you wrote that the U.S. military is working with $1 billion a year advertising budget. More than 10,000 military recruiters stalk the hallways of high schools across the country, targeting those with the fewest options after graduations. Black and brown people are disproportionately recruited. Can you tell us more about your work in the schools?
Sure. Chicago is actually a prime recruiting ground for military recruiters. Many kids find themselves unenrolled from gym class and enrolled in JROTC training, which is an attempt to get kids used to the military lifestyle and all the things that come with it so they can be prepared to sign up for the military. And Chicago has the largest JROTC program in the nation with more than 11,000 kids. 95% are either black or brown. And you don't see these recruiters in the North Shore or in the western suburbs or places where kids have more options after graduation. And like I said, if you're asking someone to go kill and die for a cause, they should know exactly what they're getting into. The CTU graciously gave me a grant to go into these schools, but it's still been very difficult because many administrators see the military as an excellent option for kids and see it as a way for them to go to school, and a kid shouldn't have to go fight imperialist wars in order to go to school, and that's kind of the message I try to communicate.
I'm really appreciative that for that work. We have a working group here in Chico, California, through the Chico Peace Alliance that is just starting out after a length of time of not being able to do any counter recruitment in the schools. But this is a really serious issue, and even though, like, the U.S. isn't got boots on the ground, but we have. Right now in Ukraine or around Ukraine, they're going to start training people. This is escalating. I was wondering if you could, I ask all my guests, especially people from Veterans for Peace, about this war in Ukraine and what you see as our hope, if there is any, for negotiations or, you know, just any words for our listeners about your concerns about Ukraine.
Yeah, I certainly have a lot of concerns about Ukraine. I don't think the U.S., you know, I'm against all forms of imperialism, whether it's the U.S. imperialism or Russian imperialism or Chinese imperialism. I don't think poor and working class people win when, you defer to the imperialist goals of the ruling class in any part of the globe. But I do think the U.S. needs to do a much better job encouraging negotiation and peace. I think they're kind of salivating at the mouth at the prospect of providing arms and increasing the potential for prolonging the war. I think that's a boon for the weapons industry, and I think it's unconscionable. And the U.S. is not the good guy in this situation, and they certainly didn't help the situation by encroaching on Russian borders for the past many decades. But I also place a lot, you know, the vast majority of the blame on Putin himself. There is no excuse for what he's doing to ordinary Ukrainians. I mean, it's a terror campaign, and anybody who thinks otherwise is believing in conspiracy theories.
Yeah, you know, we only have a minute or two left, and I'm struggling with what to ask you next. But I think, you know, as an Afghan veteran of that period, I should return and ask you what you thought, what you think our responsibility is toward Afghani people who we abandoned in Afghanistan, who are our allies and who worked for the coalition forces and now are either dead or fearing for their lives or in Pakistan waiting to be able to go somewhere other than hunkered down in Pakistan. Can you just, Rory Fanning, can you just address that?
Yeah, I think the U.S. owes reparations to many groups around the world. First and foremost, to the Afghans, who we created conditions for the ongoing famine that is happening there. The country is in even worse shape than it was when we first arrived. To say nothing of all the, you know, tens of thousands of people that have lost their lives as a result of U.S. occupation. We owe it to the Afghan people to rebuild their country or take refugees in, as many as they'd like to come to the country. And I think that's really the only answer.
You know, a lot of people, we thought that we were going to be able to get some Afghan refugees here, and people were paying this $500 each, you know, these large families, $500 each, even for babies. And then the United States then did not take those refugees. And so, this Afghanistan war has just been dropped. We just move on to our next conflict. And I agree with you. It's a terrible situation. But I'm going to ask you one more question because it just feels so pressured with the time we don't have. Is about China. And the United States seems to be poking China. And it seems so illogical to me. And I was wondering, you as an anti-imperialist thinker, what your thoughts are on what we can and should be doing, what the listeners and I should be doing to stop this.
Yeah, I think, you know, the starting point is recognizing that we have way more in common with ordinary Chinese people than we do with the ruling class of our own country and the people who are, looking to steal other countries' natural resources, grow the U.S. empire, and maintain spheres of influence in places that they shouldn't be. Everybody's been so outraged about this balloon, but the U.S. has its tentacles in every single corner of the globe in terms of surveillance and monitoring. You know, Edward Snowden showed us that. So we're pretty hypocritical in the way we're looking at the Chinese, and we just want to take the stuff before the Chinese take the stuff. But the Chinese military is microscopic relative to the U.S. at this point. We have 11 aircraft carriers, and they barely have one. I think they bought one used from the Ukraine when they sold them in the 90s. They may have just acquired another. So I would be very cautious of all this drum beating towards war, and we do not want to, you know, we want to push back at any kind of racism that is kind of emerging as a result of the U.S. attempts to maintain these, you know, war on terror military budgets and Cold War era military budgets, because they're looking for an excuse to do so. And and it's up to all of us to make sure we don't fight another war.
Yeah, exactly.
With someone like China.
So Rory Fanning's book is Worth Fighting For, An Army Ranger's Journey Out of the Military and Across America. I apologize to listeners for whatever went wrong with getting Rory on the line today, because we had a lot more to talk about. And I do appreciate you. Do you want to have any last words about what we didn't cover? I mean, something that's just critical that you would like, you know, listeners in Northern California to know or hear?
Oh, I always like to say, because, I mean, the anti-war movement is not certainly flourishing right now, but there are other ways you can challenge U.S. imperialism, and that's fighting for free college education to all. That undercuts a lot of the manipulation and you know, attempts by the U.S. military to go after poor and working class people to pay for their college education, fight for free health care. And if you want to be, someone who fights for the environment, you have to challenge U.S. empire as well, because the U.S. is the largest polluter on the planet. So there's other ways to challenge U.S. imperialism besides, you know, specifically marching out in the streets talking about war. There's a lot of ways to go about it, but you have to, you know, start incorporating that into your other movement work, and just being an anti-imperialist. It means you're anti-racist, pro-environment, and pro-equality in so many ways. So yeah. Thank you so much, Chris. I'm so sorry that this we went to voicemail 3 times, and I just couldn't get back a hold of you. So hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you, Rory Fanning. Thank you for your work. Thank you for speaking out. I really appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Bye.
All right, folks, stay tuned for Playing Dead. Ray Lager's in the house, and he'll be with you in just a second here. I'd like to thank our underwriters. Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And by DK Web Design, providing digital marketing services to improve your business's online presence, including websites, social media management, and search engine optimization. In 2012, owner Danielle Vogel started DK as a way to give back to the community by helping other organizations reach their full potential. Details to maximize your web presence at dkwebdesign.com and at 530-809-4989. Peace to all of you. Here is the community calendar.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Mark Baker. Tonight is the opening night of the Vagina Monologues by Eve Ensler at the Roland Taylor Recital Hall on the Chico State campus. Presented by Chico State, Catalyst Domestic Violence Services, and Women's Health Specialists. This show discusses mature themes. The Vagina Monologues starts at 7 p.m. in the Roland Taylor Recital Hall in the Chico State Performing Arts Center. On Saturday, the Campfire Restoration Project is offering an in-person educational and hands-on workshop on Good Fire at Noble Park in Paradise starting at 10 a.m. This workshop will feature talks by experts, lunch, and a live biochar demonstration. Organizers will offer ways to connect with resources, as well as volunteer opportunities to work with local specialists to reduce fire risks and restore habitats in local fire-affected communities. This is a free event, but organizers ask that attendees please register in advance. Sustained rainfall will cancel the event. More information can be found on the Campfire Restoration Project's Facebook page. On Sunday will be the 41st annual Almond Blossom Run starting at 9 a.m. at Durham High School. This event, presented by the Durham Sports Boosters, will include a 5K and 10K run or walk around the blooming almond orchards with chip timing provided by Under the Sun Events. For more information, go to durhamsportsboosters.com. And all this week, the 1078 Gallery presents an exhibition by Rick Arnitz and John Farrell, a show featuring the works of two abstract painters who previously presented their works together at the gallery in 1986. The 1078 Gallery is located at 1710 Park Avenue in Chico. For more information, please visit 1078gallery.org.